Welcome to the Art Impact Podcast, a place to talk about walking your path and leading your artistic career through mastery, entrepreneurship, and social impact. I'm Raquel Balestella, a business coach and a theater maker, and I'm here to help you build a sustainable, impactful, and freaking awesome career as an artist. Following your creative call is one of the most exhilarating and deep down fulfilling journeys there is. And it's one where we feel the most vulnerable too. It can be everything but easy at times, but I know you wouldn't settle for anything less. This podcast is made by and for entrepreneurial artists who are finding new ways of creating more art and impact in the world. If learning how to lead your career as an entrepreneur while building a heart-to-heart community, having a pretty beautiful bank account and loads of fun along the way, it's your thing too, this podcast is for you. Let's dive in. So, hey everyone, after quite a pause, we are back. Welcome to one more episode of Art Impact. I'm your host, Raquel Balestella, and I'm so excited to have you here today. So, this last year, almost an year since our last episode, was kind of a gestation pause, not really of a human being, but of my theater company, Imaginary Theater. So, Imaginary is a contemporary theater company championing the rights of every child to fully develop their creativity and well-being. And for the last year, we have created some beautiful and interactive theater shows and experiences for young people and families, combining puppetry, storytelling, and the latest discoveries on children's mental well-being. So it's been a very interesting and adventurous journey, and we have been working with schools and also children at risk. And I'm really proud and I'm really glad with our journey so far. If you are curious about this new initiative, you can check our website at imaginary.org, imaginary with an I, not a Y, but I will also put the link in the show notes. Coming back, can I really tell you what? I'm so excited to be here with you in the Art Impact podcast again. This year, I think I really discovered that this podcast is really a vital part of my creative process and really such a beautiful space of inspiration and collaboration for myself as a creator, first instance. And I'm so thrilled to be able to continue to share with you this journey and the insights of so many artists and creators who are doing some pretty inspiring and powerful work out there. And really just experience, you know, every week that we are not in this boat alone, and that's so much easier to find the courage, the everyday courage that we need to create our careers as artists, as creators, when we work together. And talking about inspiring and powerful creators, today you are in for a treat. In today's episode, I'm talking with the one and only Lucy Deer. Lucy is an applied theater practitioner, theater director, and community producer from London, with 15 years of experience of working in the applied theatre field. She designs and delivers projects with mainstream and special needs primary and secondary schools and college, youth centres, youth theatres, hospitals, universities, museums, theatres and arts organisations. She specializes in working with inner city community groups, building confidence and creating positive experiences through the arts. In the UK, she has worked with so many organizations, including Soho Theatre, Young Vic, Old Vic, Lyric Hammersmith, the Unicorn Theatre, the Southwark Playhouse, the British Museum, the Gate Theatre, Great Ormond Street Hospital, Chicken Shed and Battersea Arts Centre, among others, and has delivered projects internationally with FOST International and Dramatic English in Hong Kong, the Philippines and Lithuania. Lucy lives in London, UK. I really love this conversation so much. Finally, without further ado, let's dive in. So, Lucy, dear, welcome to the Art Impact podcast. I'm so excited to talk with you today. It has been ages. And I'm truly, truly looking forward to our chat today. How are you?
Yeah, I'm fine. Thanks for having me. This is nice. Nice to reconnect with you after a long time. Yeah, lovely. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, very welcome. So I met you when I volunteered with Chicken Shed, like about 10 years ago, really. And and was such a wonderful experience to be able to volunteer with Chicken Shed. And you were one of the facilitators. Mm-hmm. And then I think if I also volunteered in another group, you facilitated of Chicken Shed as well. Mm-hmm. And then I finished my physical theater studies, and then motherhood started for me, and and then I think it has been really some 8 years of really motherhood, like fully immersion. And now I'm coming out and having now a more professional life again. So it's really 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 great to reconnect, and it's amazing. And I was telling you just now, I'm so amazed to be able to see your journey during this time and all these beautiful projects and pieces and theaters and plays that you were doing and have been doing. And so, I would love to dive into that.
Yeah,
I would love to start with, I think it was one of my favorite questions of this podcast. Tell us your story, Lucy. Tell us how it started for you, your career as a applied theater practitioner, theater maker, a community producer, and you're such a prolific creative. But tell us about little Lucy as well. How your start in creativity? Yeah, how that began?
Sure. So I've always been interested in like art and creative arts generally. And when I was growing up, I was like a member of youth theatres myself. So I guess I've always been quite comfortable in like community workshop environments.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it came to like my A-levels and deciding what to do when I was at university, I was originally going to go into like set design, because I thought it would be an interesting marriage between like art and drama.
Mm-hmm.
But then after some consideration, I realized that I was like naturally more skilled in theater than in visual art. So I went for the one that would be slightly more within my hands, I guess. I just have always been a bit more driven in theater. Mm-hmm. Whereas like when I've done visual arts, it's kind of much more, what's the word, dependent on like mood or whether you're up for creating stuff, whereas I felt like I could kind of sustain myself in theatre a little bit more.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So I went and did a degree at Queen Mary, University of London in Mile End, and it was called an applied theatre degree, and I didn't really know what that was. Mm-hmm. Until I was doing it, except when I was in a workshop once, and I think we were having a visit from a guest, Sylvan Baker, who I think was at London Bubble at that time. He came in to work with us. We had loads of different guests. We had Stone Crabs, who I later then did the director's program with. But I think during one of those kind of community or applied theatre workshops, we had to run activities for each other. And then I was like, and I was leading a workshop, and then I just got loads of good feedback from the people in my group. And I was like, okay. And I think someone was like, oh, that seemed really natural to you. So I was like, okay. So I kind of kept that at the back of my brain. Graduated in applied theatre. Then I wanted to travel, but not just for the sake of it. So I ended up going to work in Hong Kong and teaching drama there and going to the Philippines for a bit. And then, yeah, really, I've just worked in theatre since. Started off doing some kind of touring performances and then slowly built up my skills in facilitating. And then, like most people, went from facilitating to like project managing and producing, and then to creating my own work. So I guess I learned the ropes and then like kind of created my own pieces when I felt like I knew what I was doing. So, yeah, I think that's how it goes normally. You end up making the mistakes on other people's projects and then going through. And when you're really good, then you apply it on your own projects. But yeah, sorry guys. No, it wasn't that bad, but I'll just say it was learning. Yeah, it was learning the I guess on other people's projects. I still work on other people's projects as well, but do my own stuff, which is a nice thing because it's a nice balance. Yeah.
Amazing. And for on your own stuff, you know, like I was so amazed to see, really how prolific is your applied theater practice. You know, like there is, you have work with youth theaters, with people living with dementia, with you know, kids with special needs, with women who may be, you know, living a domestic abuse. It's such a very, such a very wide range of audiences and people you have been interacting and serving, and you know, I think that's so fascinating. So when you say doing my own stuff, what is that? Tell us more about that. What is that for you?
So I've always been interested in like gender, and at uni I was really interested in gender studies and looking at kind of gender roles. I've been always really respected and admired work of Tender and like applied theatre projects which use the arts to challenge gender normativity. And I think that's come from kind of my frustrations growing up of like seeing kind of boys and girls being treated differently and wanting to challenge that a little bit. And then also feeling like there's certain boxes that I should have to fit into and not always feeling completely comfortable with that. So I think that's where it came from. And then my performance at Queen Mary, one of my end of like uni performances, was me applying the recipe of preparing a Christmas turkey to my own body, which is inspired by, like, as you'd imagine, like performance art. We were taught by like Lois Weaver and Peggy Shaw, and we looked at the work. I'm going to forget all of their names now, obviously. But lots of work from lots of performance artists who use their bodies like as a site of kind of political discussion or intervention. So I guess from that kind of turkey performance and like I guess the metaphor of that piece was like preparing myself and women's bodies for like public consumption and the ideas around that in terms of the rituals that women do to themselves. And you know, everyone, the rituals that everyone does to themselves on a daily basis, and then kind of pushing that a little bit more to the extreme and being like, okay, so you know, is the way we prepare ourselves for public consumption as women, and what does that mean when we are consumed, and ask some questions around that. So I've always been interested in that. And then when I went to my postgrad at Central, we had a project, what's it, a workshop where we had to design our own project, and I just very quickly and naturally came to like a project that looked at like gender roles. And then I kind of forgot about that, lived my life a bit, did various different jobs, had various different relationships, found myself in a very abusive relationship, and then found myself in a women's support group when I heard lots of stories in the room that were very similar to my own. And it kind of dawned on me that although we all had really similar stories, we all felt completely isolated because this wasn't being talked about in the public sphere. And I understand why those spaces are necessarily private. However, what that can do is like keep other people's secrets, when actually it needs to be shared and it needs to be talked about, because not talking about it can further isolate people who are already very isolated in abusive relationships and make them feel when they're on their own, where in fact there's a massive community of people who have gone through exactly the same thing. So then lockdown happened, and I had a lot of spare time to apply. Everyone was just bored and like making bread, weren't they, and buying plants, and I don't have a garden, so it probably that was quite a good thing in this sense that I just thought, you know what, I'm going to apply for some funding. I had some really valuable help from a career coach who helped me hone in on some ideas. And I really wanted to create this piece around my experience and based on other women's experiences of domestic abuse and coercive control. So then All In Your Head was born. Had a brilliant producer, a brilliant writer, Saffa Benson Effiam came on board. And then we ended up creating a, this is a very long answer, sorry, but
No,
creating
it's amazing. No,
okay,
I'm loving to know like
good.
all of it. Yeah, go for it.
We ended up creating, like, inadvertently, a site-specific online piece
Oh, wow.
based in a flat, which was actually worked out quite well in terms of timing, because as we all know, like during lockdown, domestic abuse rates like skyrocketed because lots of people were trapped inside with their perpetrators. So it was some kind of really helpful synergy in creating a piece of work based in someone's flat. Because actually, I, you know, me and my actor had to like bubble up during that time. We couldn't see anyone else. It's quite an intense experience. Bless her, Naomi Sparrow. So we basically just used a flat. And then looked at who the audience could be as voyeurs for that situation. I'll send you the link if you haven't seen it already. But it's a weave with this narrative where Naomi, the actor in All In Your Head, played Leanne. And we follow her relationship from when she meets her boyfriend to when we realize that he's a perpetrator. We is interweaved real women's verbatim accounts of what happened. So we're constantly with that piece, like bringing the audience in to empathize with Naomi playing Leanne and kind of what, and understand her case a little bit more, and then kind of pushing them back and reminding the audience that this isn't just a character. So that's the project. And then since then, because it was online, it was recorded, we've done lots of work around bringing it into community spaces, bringing it into schools, bringing it into colleges, bringing it to Solace Women's Aid, using it with survivors, young people, as a preventative measure and as a discussion point, an access point really for discussion around coercive control and domestic abuse, educating young people about red flags, warning signs, showing them the very early part of the play and asking them whether they think anything is wrong with that. Often they'll say no, and then we fast forward. But it's just about, I guess, yeah, opening up some of those kind of norms, the things that might get glamorized in like TV, in media, in songs. A song was a massive part of All In Your Head, like looking at basically pop songs that, when you listen to the lyrics, are like, actually, those relationships are really toxic, but we all sing along and they, get ready to them, and like, and just picking those apart a little bit, I think. I guess it's like using the arts as a mirror to like have a look at our normals and challenge that a little bit. So that's my own project.
Amazing, amazing, amazing. So beautiful. Yeah, so interesting. Oh, thank you so much for sharing. Yeah, for sharing All of it. Yeah. So
Yeah.
beautiful. And I haven't seen it yet, but I really want to. And we can share the link on the episode page as well if you want, so people can
So
access it as well.
I will I'll put my details on kind of the link that you can share. I have to be a little bit careful about just chucking it, not chucking it out. It sounds really rude, but like with who it's shared with in terms of like protecting the women's voices in the story, but I'll share it on like a case by case basis. Yeah. So I have to be quite sensitive around that in terms of like identifiable voices and like obviously making sure that the sensitive nature of what they were sharing with us was handled kind of sensitively. So yeah, absolutely. But I'll normally share it on like an individual basis and ask people what to share. And then maybe a time it's brought, because we did a version of it in the theatre before we did a live version, which kind of looked at the relationship between Leanne's online self. So it used clips of the video and then real life self. So it was like the character was looking back at her past memories. So we explored that a little bit, like live versus recorded self was quite interesting in the way that like we all kind of flick through our phone gallery, people who might not anymore be in our lives and kind of think about where we were at that point. But yeah, I'll let you know if we do a stage version again.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Yeah, perfect. Yeah, whatever. Yeah, it's shareable, isn't it? And convenient. Perfect, perfect. And I, a question that I'm really, really curious to know your thoughts about. Applied theater is such a powerful practice, such a powerful medium. And I was so really, again, amazed to see how your applied theater practice like extends, to so many communities and needs and audiences. I think it just shows, how powerful, how prolific, how, those tools are really, really have so much potential in them, that they are able to serve like, so many different kinds of needs and stages in life, and all of that. So I would love to hear, do you see any common thread, in applied theater? Do you see any common, when you bring people together and you do a workshop, be them like young people or elderly people or and all the others we have talked, do you see any common, is a common practice? What is that anything common, or is it just very, very unique, it working?
Great question. I think the kind of most commonality between all of those groups, and probably the most obvious thing, is that they're all just different types of people. Do you know what I mean? I think sometimes we can separate people by kind of category, but like actually, when I work with one group, all of those skills are transferable to another group, and then another group, and another group. And actually, when you strip it down, or aside from our labels, we're all just humans kind of figuring out life and trying to, get through the best way we can. I guess like I tend to work, or the what I tend to work and also get tend to employed to work with people whose voices might need to be heard a bit more amplified, or whose voices aren't being heard. I guess like I'm speaking to the Brazilian in you, and like in terms of theatre of the oppressed and like social, promoting social change and promoting equality, and actually working and using the arts to break down kind of to work in a kind of inclusive way that breaks down barriers. So all of the projects pretty much that I deliver are funded and free for participants. For me, they're not about like quote unquote like talent per se. It's about using the arts as an expressive tool. You might have people in those sessions who are really talented, but it's not about a competitive way of working where one person's skill is better than the other. It's about creating a space where everyone's like kind of everyone has something to offer and everyone's contribution is valued. So it's, I guess, creating a space that feels equal and empowering is the main thing.
And
that doesn't necessarily mean, you know, I mean, sometimes I work with like businesses and work with people with lots of money and use the arts to encourage confidence in like public speaking. So I think, yeah, it's a weird one, but I guess it's about, my kind of social mission is about creating spaces where everyone feels valuable and safe and can express themselves, really. I guess that's the common thread.
Yeah, I'm taking notes. So beautiful. I'm taking notes. Good that we're recording, you know, but I'm really taking notes. Beautiful. Yeah.
And also, so often our spaces, whether we intend them to be or not, can be like competitive because we work, because we're part of a, you know, in London, we're part of a capitalist society where like things should be efficient and people should work quickly, and like, you know, there's a merit or emphasis placed on how quickly you got something done, but actually like trying to strip some of that back and creating a space where people can be in the moment away from their phones, connecting as communities, which I think like we've lost a bit, but like, you know, certainly in London, but you know, like places in the world do it, all around the world do it much better than we do. It's actually us, you know, coming back to that, trying to bring back some of that need, and you know, that needed human desire to connect and be in the same room as people at the same time. And
beautiful. I'm a theater is my medium as well, and I'm also it's so good to hear, you know, it's kind of all of those things you just said, you kind of just gave words, you know, to many things I felt, but didn't really need to have the exact words for it. And so it's so beautiful. And I think, you know, hearing what you say, what stays with me is that like theater is just such a huge, well, all the arts at the end, but it's just so humane, isn't it? It's just made for us, but made by us, but made so much made for who we really are, you know, as beings in
It's funny, like I've never been that interested in like kind of jazz hands or like the entertainment side of theater. I'm much more interested in like, I was also thinking about kind of going into anthropology. Do you know what I mean? If I didn't, so I'm more interested in like the psychology and the anthropology of theater as opposed to like the spectacle. I think the spectacle's fun, like and nice, but I think it's not what kind of keeps me up at night or gets me, you know, thinking. I think, yeah, it's kind of the psychology and the human element, like you say. Yeah, it's nice to be asked the question, actually, because sometimes you don't realize or don't consider why you're doing something until you're asked. You're like, oh, I do know. Yeah, that's good.
Oh, nice, perfect. And and moving on, I think on the same direction. I think it's in my experience, to know better, you know, why I do what I do, it wasn't natural as well, but it's been so important. And usually we, because our purpose is such a it lives in a part of our brain where there is no language there. You know, the part of our brain who produces language is in the other side, and our why lives, you know, in our more intuitive and emotional side. So finding the words is really a challenge sometimes. And I think sometimes, you know, what are the most fulfilling experiences for us? They tell, you know, ourselves and others what's our why. So I would love to hear, Lucy, tell us a moment, an experience, a moment that's in your career that was very, very deeply fulfilling for you. Like, you know, like if you thought, oh my goodness, because we struggle so much as creatives, isn't it? And you think, oh, if I could live this, you know, every day, oh my goodness, it would be just in heaven. Share with us.
Yeah. I think like some of the outreach and community work I've done with All In Your Head has been really, really powerful, both for me as like a survivor, as that type from that relationship, but also as like a theatre maker. So it's like a quite thin line between my two roles with, someone with lived experience and someone as a director of that project. And I'm lucky that I've been able to get funding to have like well-being support so that one doesn't kind of interrupt the other too much. But what we've been doing is creating like a really nice package that goes into schools that works with mixed gender groups on unhealthy and healthy relationships, but also works with young men, which is really, really interesting. So I work with a brilliant Waltham Forest based spoken word artist called Patrick Evans. He's male and he's done a lot of brilliant, he's a brilliant poet, but he's done lots of work around expressive poetry about him, his identity, and how it was for him growing up male and what that meant for him in terms of like again boxes that he felt he needed to fit within or stereotypes that he felt like he needed to conform to in order to fit, what it is to be quote unquote male. So what we do is we've designed a lovely workshop where we go into work with young men in secondary schools, and we do a mass basically a workshop which is sold to the schools as on masculinity, where the we work with a group of really small group, that focus group of about 10 young men who have been identified by the school as kind of, having potentially problematic views towards girls or women in the school, or just flagged for kind of needing a bit more support. So we go in and then we do lots of kind of getting to know you trust games with them. Patrick performs his poem about being a man to them, and then they basically take sections each, and we have a discussion about some of the sentences in po Patrick's poem, and then they create their own spoken word pieces back called A Man dot dot dot. So it gives them an opportunity, as young men, to reflect on their experience of growing up as young men, and how they feel about that, and kind of interrupting some of the automatics that we kind of just think that we have to do when we're going through life. Do you know what I mean? And challenging and gently questioning some of the choices around, like, oh, okay, why is it that we might feel, or you might feel as men that you have to be strong, and what does strong mean, and can strong be shown in a different way that, and talking about that. That's a really powerful session, like watching some of their kind of eyes open or during that session is really, really, really interesting. That's the kind of work I could do all the time because it's personal, but it's also my work. Do you know what I mean? I feel like those nice moments are often a really nice marriage of the things that you care about with the things that you're good at, so it's a combination of the two. And if you can get those two together, that's gorgeous because it doesn't feel like work. But yeah, some really nice moments in that. I think just going in with questions as opposed to answers is a really nice way of leading that type of work. And also it's just questions I'm interested in generally, which is like, why is it expected that women are like this? Why is it expected, and et cetera. Yeah.
Wow, amazing, amazing, beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. And I think it's such a, full circle for me. It's such a way of ending, the, or not ending, but just continue the
Bringing
All In Your
it,
Head project, full circle, because
yeah.
you look into the, well, the experience of the women, and then also to the experience that men have, and how those things, and to go there, to go there and be able to work with them, with young men as well. I think it's such a powerful,
Yeah.
beautiful
And
thing.
it also gets us away from the narrative that is protecting young women and saying, oh, the equivalent of saying, like, wear a longer skirt. Do you know what I mean? That kind of thing, as opposed to looking at the choices that young men and men can have in situations. And we say it, obviously it's that gendered, because domestic violence is gendered. Do you know what I mean? Obviously it can happen to anyone of any gender, sexuality, class, background, disability, but it is disproportionately violence against women. So that's why we focus it in that nature. But it's good for anyone to know, about power dynamics in relationships, abuse and dynamics in relationships, and how that can manifest regardless of gender or sexuality.
Amazing, beautiful. Lucy, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a blast. I'm so like fascinated by what you're doing and to be able to get to know it more, closely and intimately. It's such a beautiful opportunity. Thank you so much for sharing your time and your beautiful
Happy end.
stories and work with us.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Now I wonder, what was your favorite insight in this episode? And most importantly, how can you integrate this new discovery into your practice as a creator right now? Want to go deeper? Go to our website and subscribe to our newsletter and receive exclusive insights and inspiration on building a freaking awesome career as a socially engaged creator every other week. Thank you so much for listening. As always, you can find our show notes or any links that we mentioned today on our website, www.raquelbalestella.com/podcast. If you got some interesting insights or found more clarity and inspiration in this episode, could you please do me a quick favor and leave us a 5-stars review? This podcast is still pretty new, and your review will help other artists just like you to find it and discover new ways of expanding their art and impact too. Thank you so much for following your creative path and for all the beautiful, meaningful, extraordinary things you create in the world, whatever form they take. Have a great rest of your week, and I will catch up with you next time.